is the takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry, and that's what it sounded like from the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court today.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet play?
This is an emotional day, personally. Yes, I've been working on this issue for many, many years, but to be able to know that our family, that our daughter now has her parents married in every single state across this country is a big deal. It's an emotional day, and I'm very proud of this country today, I have to say.
Advocates of same-sex marriage celebrating outside the Supreme Court the 5-4 decision declaring marriage equality. President Barack Obama delivered an emotional statement marking this as a historic milestone with some stirring words from the White House Rose Garden.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
The decision in Obergefell v. Hodges came down today at nearly the end of the Supreme Court term. The majority opinion was written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, whose passionate feelings about discrimination against gays seemed to come out during oral arguments months ago, and that passion was borne out today, once again, in a sweeping decision. Marriage is a keystone of the nation's social order, Justice Kennedy wrote. There is no difference between same and opposite-sex couples with respect to this principle. The right to personal choice regarding marriage is inherent in the concept of individual autonomy. The abiding connection between marriage and liberty is why the court invalidated interracial marriage bans under the Due Process Clause in the case Loving v. Virginia years ago. This decision requires states to license same-sex marriage as well as to recognize same-sex marriages from other states. And Justice Kennedy added, protecting the right to marry safeguards children and families and thus draws meaning from related rights of child-rearing, procreation, and education. Above and beyond the relatively narrow issue of marriage alone, with these words, the gay community is explicitly recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court as part of the American mainstream, and its successes and contributions a central part of the American exercise of freedom. All four dissenting justices wrote opinions today, including Chief Justice Roberts, who for the first time read his lengthy dissent from the bench, saying that this decision amounted to the court usurping the rights of states to make laws. Justice Scalia said that this decision represented a danger to U.S. democracy, although both Roberts and Scalia graciously said that no one's celebration today should be begrudged by anyone. Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and professor at George Washington University Law School, is with us. Professor, I gather we've just seen constitutional history in the making before our eyes.
Well, it's a tremendous milestone. It's one of the most dramatic decisions that I have encountered during the 2 decades that I've been covering the court. And what is so striking is both the passion and sweep of the majority decision and the dissents. Justice Kennedy's majority decision is expansive. It says that the rights of autonomy and freedom are at the heart both of the liberty protected by the Due Process Clause and the equality protected by the Equal Protection Clause. And it talks movingly about the centrality of marriage to people's self-definition and to their ability to live happy and fulfilled lives. And then you have the dissents, which, as you suggested, are equally passionate in their denunciation of the idea that the court has usurped the right of the states to make their own decisions, and that basically that this is a threat to American democracy. But what's so striking about both the majority and the dissent is that the passion has to do with jurisprudential principle, not personal preference. Justice Kennedy has long been committed to the idea that individual autonomy protects personal and significant life choices, and he's entirely consistent in extending that principle to same-sex marriage. Similarly, Chief Justice Roberts is equally consistent in defending judicial restraint. Some people may be confused by his 2 decisions just yesterday upholding the Affordable Care Act and then today voting to uphold laws restricting same-sex marriage. But both are consistent with this principle of deference to democratic decision-making. So I think it's significant in its practical effects. It's riveting constitutional drama. And I just hope that all of our listeners will read the decisions, both the majority decision and the all four of the dissents, because this is a constitutional education on an incredibly important day for the United States of America.
It's also a social and cultural education. Would you say that from this point on, at no point can gays and lesbians in America be defined as a fringe community, as anything other than the mainstream of America in American life?
Yes, the decision is unequivocal in welcoming gays and lesbians into the full protections of the Constitution, both the Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause. It says that any attempt to consign them to a separate status would demean them and infringe on their dignity. And it really talks about how marriage has evolved over the millennia and has become ever more inclusive, how old rules excluding women from full citizenship have been repudiated, and African Americans as well. And it's part of this trajectory of what Justice Ginsburg has called an increasingly inclusive constitution. It's a beautiful word that she uses that has come to embrace gays and lesbians as full American citizens.
One of the things that I find striking in the evolution of this decision and this entire debate as we've come towards this decision today is I began really thinking of marriages and marriage licenses as a very administrative, almost trivial sense of the exercise of public and state, regulatory authority. But Justice Kennedy really extrapolates from the marriage license almost the entire breadth and width of American liberty and freedom.
He does indeed. You had all sorts of great excerpts that you read from the decision, but his final paragraph: no union is more profound than marriage. It embodies the highest ideals of love, fidelity, devotion, sacrifice, and family. It would misunderstand these men and women to say they disrespect the idea of marriage. Their hope is not to be condemned to live in loneliness, excluded from one of civilization's oldest institutions. They ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right.
Jeffrey, your reactions to the president's remarks, I mean, we're really seeing a kind of interesting confluence of the various branches of government embracing something that is a deep social change in America that, as the president said, came quickly like a thunderbolt.
It is remarkable to see history in the making and to see both the president and the court, as you said, acknowledging and codifying this social change. Throughout our lifetime, the Constitution has expanded to take account of new consensuses about what the Constitution means, and it was so striking that the president talked not only about the court's decision, but about the countless small acts of courage of millions of people across decades, parents who love their children no matter what. He was signifying that the court's decision is the culmination and codification, not the cause of this expansion of equality for gays and lesbians. And the court, interestingly, signified something similar, where at the end of the majority opinion by Justice Kennedy, the court cites the lower court decisions, both federal and state, and the statutes that have been passed expanding gay and lesbian equality. So unlike the Brown versus Board of Education decision, which almost acted as if the court was creating a right of equality by judicial fiat, here both the court and the president are acknowledging that it really was the courage of gays and lesbians over decades that changed the hearts and minds of the American people in a way that, as President Obama said, vindicated the belief that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. Wow.
And you can hear, you know, the president saying our LGBT brothers and sisters. You know, this is a change of rhetoric and language that is going to be felt really throughout the United States, where you don't hear LGBT said as though it was a mainstream group. And this is something that is an embrace that is very, very emotional. It goes way beyond marriage here. I'm wondering if there's a sense in which the court is ahead of America, that the court is ahead of politicians, because Bill Clinton endorsed the Defense of Marriage Act. It was a campaign issue, but nobody advocated striking it down. The Obama administration pulled away from defending that act in the Department of Justice. So politicians, it seemed, have tiptoed towards this, while the court today has really thrown the door wide open.
It has, but I think this is one of those remarkable occasions where the court is perfectly in tune with public opinion rather than stepping too far ahead of it or lagging too far behind it. It's the politicians who took longer to catch up. But remember, just 2 years ago, the court refused to take a marriage equality case because the liberal justices didn't think that the country was ready. And Justice Ginsburg has so famously said that the court leapt ahead of public opinion when it decided Roe v. Wade. But here, both the polls, which are being transformed before our eyes, international opinion, where Ireland, of all places, recognized a right of gay marriage just the other day, and in the U.S., where it seems that both Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservative citizens, have come to embrace the idea of gay and lesbian equality, makes this really an occasion where the court seems fully the partner of the American people. Now, it has to be said, the dissenting opinions do not agree with that, and these are four very passionate dissents from Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Scalia, Alito, and Thomas that really accuse the court of having subverted American democracy and second-guessed the American people on this topic, even as they went out of their way, as you mentioned, to not begrudge the celebrations. So there's a debate on the court about whether or not the court is or is not being properly deferential to majority sentiment. But President Obama and the majority of the court seem to believe that they're in step. And there's a sense, what makes this so such a constitutional moment is that you sense the court codifying social respect for gays and lesbians. Mm. Marriage is obviously an act of social respect, and gays and lesbians are included in that. But more broadly, as you suggest, they are now fully included in American citizenship, not because of what the court did, but because of what the people have done, and the court isn't somehow codifying and blessing that.
Jeffrey Rosen, President and CEO of the National Constitution Center, a professor at George Washington University Law School. Thanks as always, Jeff.
Thank you, John.
So are you with the majority or are you a dissenter? Where do you stand on this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court?
Hi, John. Historic day. This is Bruce Scherer in Tacoma, Washington. I never really thought I would live long enough to see this day. How times have changed in the last 62 years, and much for the better, in my humble opinion. Thank you.
This is Matt from Charlotte. I do not support the Supreme Court decision regarding gay marriage. The states have a right to enact laws that govern their citizens, and the federal government is usurping the rights of the state governments in this case.
This is Lexi from Omaha, Nebraska. I'm so excited I can't even think straight. The feeling that I can have my wife and be anywhere in the country is completely indescribable to me. All I can say is hashtag love wins.
Suzette on Facebook, I am for equality. Love is love. I feel the Supreme Court made the correct decision. Orlando, Florida, marriage is a religious institution and government should stay out of it, thus going to church in front of preacher and getting married. Abraham Scott Henson on Facebook, for me as a Baha'i, that's my religion, marriage is defined as a union between a man and a woman. But personally, still speaking as a Baha'i, I believe that same-sex couples should be able to have a civil union and enjoy all the legal benefits that any married couple would have. Continuing this conversation, call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway. Among the people with questions and people who might have to change their lifestyle and their policy as a result of the decision of the Supreme Court today is Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. President Piper, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me. Honored to join you.
Now, you're concerned about your tax-exempt status because of the way you deal with the homosexuality on your campus. Can you explain how that would work?
Well, Oklahoma Wesleyan University is a Christian university. We were founded and chartered as such over 100 years ago. We have a policy that adheres to what we believe is the healthiest sexual behavioral choice out there, and that is behave according to biblical standards, and you will be more sexually healthy than otherwise. We expect our faculty and our students to live within that honor code and that behavioral code, and we've been doing that for over 100 years, and we do not intend to change that. As I understand the conversation between Verrilli and Alito in the Supreme Court hearing, our Solicitor General actually confirmed Alito's concerns that our tax-exempt status as a Christian university could be revoked as a result of this new legislation or this new law.
And what would that mean financially for your school?
Well, every college or university across the land, whether it's public or private, enjoys 501c3 status and therefore is tax exempt because of the good that we do within our culture and within our communities and the welfare that we enhance and provide through education. If that tax exempt status were taken away, people could not make a contribution to the university and deduct it. Our property, we would be subject to property taxes and sales taxes, and we would be in a very different financial model than OU or OSU or my alma mater, Michigan State University. All of a sudden, the Christian university would be financially liable to pay taxes, whereas these other universities would not.
Do you buy the argument that gay rights is actually a code word for a gay agenda, which envisions a much more sexually problematic sort of set of behaviors in the future?
Well, I can't read somebody else's mind, so I think in answering your question, John, I'd have to say this. I can tell you what I believe and what I think and what I know based on the empirical evidence therein. The healthiest sexual choice is a monogamous heterosexual choice. The Centers for Disease Control data confirms that. History confirms that. Personal experience confirms that. We're trying to teach our students to adhere to the healthiest behavioral standards, whether it be sexually or otherwise. And I don't believe that an educational institution should be penalized for promoting that proven sexual behavior that accrues to an individual and community's health more so than other choices. So I know what I believe. I don't know what other individuals think or believe. I can't read their minds. What I can do is read their words and listen to what they say.
But the court says there's no evidence that there is a distinction between health in the behavior of same-sex couples versus heterosexual couples, and certainly finds no evidence that that would affect children's health or family health in any way.
Well, the court needs to read the Centers for Disease Control data then, because the data is out there. Any behavioral choice other than a heterosexual monogamous choice accrues to the disadvantage of the individuals involved therein. Incrementally, we have the data out there. If you engage in a behavioral choice that compromises that traditional Judeo-Christian standard, you are subjecting yourself to sexually transmitted disease potential over and above what you would have had otherwise. And common sense tells you that, too, not just the CDC.
Choices and sort of moral conundrums to be thought through in the wake of this decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. He's thinking about them in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Everett Piper is president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. President Piper, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That measles outbreak in California last year revealed that the state has pockets of seriously underprotected communities. Parental discretion and interest in natural foods and medicines, along with a familiar Western libertarian streak, has meant that in some California schools, as few as 50% of students are immunized. Lawmakers have responded to this public health controversy with a bill requiring all public school children be vaccinated, unless there's a medical reason not to. For some lawmakers, it's an issue of parental freedom.
It should be my choice in discussing with my doctor about my children's personal medical choices without the interference of the government.
Vaccines have gone up 20%. There's not a need for this bill.
That's Republican Assemblyman Devin Mathis and Republican Assemblywoman Beth Gaines speaking yesterday at the Capitol in opposition to this bill, which has passed, and Governor Jerry Brown has the final word on whether to sign it into law. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez joins us from California. You were one of the co-sponsors and writers of this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm the principal co-author in the Assembly.
And what does this address, do you think?
As far as community immunity or herd immunity, as it's called, ensuring that we have enough people vaccinated to stop these kind of outbreaks that we saw earlier this year, we have a couple percentage points to go. And so this addresses that. It's ensuring as kids enter school that we have more and more kids vaccinated, not the other way around, and that we start to create that herd immunity so that we know if there's ever another outbreak that it can be stopped immediately.
Now, does this affect people who are homeschooled? There is certainly a lot of confusion about who was most vulnerable and where the unprotected pockets were really coming from.
It's pretty clear in California law. This affects anyone who goes to public or private school or childcare. Homeschooled children are exempted. We can't force vaccinations of homeschooled kids. And independent study children are exempted. So if a parent feels that compelled and there's no medical reason why their child shouldn't be getting vaccinations, but if they feel that compelled, then they need to find an alternative educational venue like homeschooling.
So parents still do have the freedom to opt out of vaccinations. They just have to opt out of public schools as well.
Public and private schools, yes. And so there's choices that any parent makes, but there's consequences to those choices. Schools should be safe. They should be the one place that all children, whether or not you're battling leukemia or 100% healthy, can go to school and understand that you're not going to get a deadly disease.
What's the controversy here? This was certainly a big, big story when it broke. There was lots of talk about lifestyle and issues of lifestyle. Is that controversy going to continue depending on what the governor does?
Well, obviously, there's a very vocal minority in this state who believe that they can and should ignore medical proof, science, and have the choice to allow their child to freeload off of herd immunity. We also have in California this weird phenomena of B-list actors and actresses who have been involved in this cause, saying vaccines cause autism or vaccines are somehow they're trace elements of mercury, which isn't true in these vaccines. And so it's kind of become too fashionable in California to opt out of vaccinations, and we need to stop that.
Democratic Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, who co-authored the mandatory vaccination bill in the California Assembly. She's a Democrat from San Diego. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nobody likes to get a shot, but everyone likes to talk about them, though. Laney writes on Facebook, if you choose not to vaccinate your child, do not enroll that child in any school or recreational activity where my child is participating. There are consequences to decisions, and you do not have the right to endanger the health of my child. I'm not even sure you have the right to endanger the children God entrusted to you, but that's a different matter.
My name is Linda, and I don't believe in mandatory vaccinations. I think they're ridiculous. I got so sick off of one when I was 6 years old, and I was in the hospital. So I think it's the parent's choice to give them, not mandatory from the state.
Andrea says no medical procedure should be mandatory for full access to public services. Mark, endangering all of society for superstitious beliefs should not even be a question in a developed nation. Kathy, even if a link to autism from vaccines was proven, though the opposite has been proven many times, to me that would be considered an acceptable risk and a lot better than a deadly disease epidemic. Keep the conversation going. Call us at 877-8MYTAKE or comment at facebook.com/thetakeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.